from KCRW. I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. In 1994, Fernando Lopez and Maria Monterrubio opened the doors of a humble restaurant on 8th Street in LA's Koreatown. It was called Galaguetza. There were four items on the menu, including tamales de mole that cost all of $5. 20 years later, Galaguetza is an LA institution, a temple to Oaxacan cuisine and a James Beard America's classic. Fernando and Maria have returned to their native Oaxaca, leaving the next generation to run the show.
Galaguetza, as a word, a direct translation would be reciprocity, communing, sharing with one another. It's that sort of spirit.
That's Patricia Lopez, head of operations for Galaguetza. She's been entrusted with the family legacy, along with her siblings, Paulina, Fernando Jr., and Elizabeth. Not only the restaurant name and recipes, but the family story, too. Patricia has written that story down in a new cookbook, simply titled Oaxaca. It's co-authored by a familiar name, LA Taco editor Javier Cabral. Welcome, both of you.
Hi, that's so beautiful. I kind of wanted to cry right now when you were reading that.
Classic Evan.
Thank you.
I feel like, I don't know, you know, we've been interviewing you over the years, Patricia, for so long. I mean, so many years, so many stories. Mm-hmm. And to have like this book, it must be an incredible moment for you.
It is. I'm just happy. I really am. 25 years this year, we turn Galaguetza, 25 years. My parents flew from Oaxaca. They were here for a party that we had for the book. And just to see them, you know, carefree, looking at their children, really taking over the family business and feeling proud of us. It's hard to describe the feeling aside from just immense happiness.
What's so interesting to me about this handover mm-hmm. is I know that on some level, as many children who grow up in the restaurant business feel, you had no desire to take over the restaurant. And your parents' strategy, your father's strategy of just leaving, telling you and your siblings, we've made the decision to go. Mm-hmm. So keep the restaurant or don't keep the restaurant. It's up to you. What did that do to your brain?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's twofold. And yes, growing up in the restaurant, I remember having this love-hate relationship because I felt for a very long time that it stole my youth, right? And I don't mean my youth like my 20s youth. I mean my childhood. I'm not a very athletic person. I never learned any sports. I was never in any extracurricular activities. And people ask me, that's so weird. Why? I'm like, because my parents were too busy trying to survive, man. We needed to work at the restaurant. Like, we didn't have time to even get sick. Growing up like that, you just grew up hating that part of your life.
The thing that took your parents away from you and that determined what you were doing every day while your friends were out.
At the mall. So
I'm so glad you weren't at the mall.
So then, you know, when this happened, you know, my dad had also lost 6 restaurants. He personally had to file bankruptcy with my mom. The business was, I think, probably 2 months away from doing the same.
The recession was brutal for the restaurant business here.
We were pretty bad. So it was the combination of number one, oh my gosh, am I going to have to go and look for a job? And then this idea that I have to work for someone every single day and coming every single day and in Spanish, they say that rendirle cuentas a alguien, like you have to tell every chicken with someone every single day, right? Like that was weird to me. And then second, I thought, oh my God, it's my dad's everything. Like this is 20 years of his life at this moment, 19, 18 years. It's going to be over just because I don't want to work hard. You know, it was like this weird moment that I thought, is this going to disappear? Like my dad's legacy, all his work, all his sweat and tears, all those nights that I didn't see him, the idea of him leaving Oaxaca, risking his life, all those things, just I didn't have an excuse not to do it. And we just decided to figure it out, man.
Aren't you glad you did?
Yes, I'm very, very. I mean, it's been amazing. I understand now when my dad would tell me before, you think you're working right now? Like what you're doing right now, you're not working when we know he was here. And I always get so mad. I used to say to myself, are you kidding me? I'm here all the time. What else do you want from me? But when he left us, I understood, oh, no, really, I wasn't really working. I was checked out. It's not until you're running a business that you understand what true work looks like.
Are you all engaged in the business?
Three out of the four.
And how is it divided up? The responsibilities. Is it divided up?
It is. It's you know, we're all equal partners, the three of us. Everybody knows what everyone else's strengths is, and we all know what our weaknesses are. So we don't focus on our weaknesses. We focus on what are we the best at? And let's figure out how we can best use you. Because aside from the restaurant, we also have other businesses that we run together. It's really a beautiful thing to be able to have full trust with your partners. And that really is what we are. We're siblings, but we're life partners.
I know we've talked about this over the years so much, but explain this notion of gelaguetza and what it means in Oaxacan culture. It's such a beautiful thing.
It's a huge word, and the meaning of it is just as big. It's this way of life in Oaxaca, to where people in town still have, we have a picture of actually my grandma's gelaguetza book, where a neighbor says, I came to your party and I brought you two chickens and a sack of beans. So then when someone else's kid gets married or something happens, someone passes away, it's this way of sharing within the town and really communing with the town and sharing with one another and creating community, really. It's at the center of creating community.
But what's extraordinary to me about it is it's so not messy that way. It's like you keep track of what other people have done for you and what you have done for them, and it can skip generations. Mm-hmm. Like, you can drag that reciprocity along for like 10 years.
Oh, even more. I mean, my mom will still get people coming and saying, oh, well, your grandma, you know, the other day someone showed up with something for my mom. It's like, oh, I remember your mom gave me this. So like now I'm returning it. It really is a generational, beautiful thing.
So, Bricia, you entrusted Javier with telling your family story. And a lot of recipe testing.
Mm-hmm. We've known each other for over a decade now. Do you know what? Jonathan introduced us?
Of course he did.
I remember he said, you need to meet this guy. So it was at Taste of the Nation Festival.
And how old was he? 12?
He wasn't of age, for sure.
So Javier, this was your first book.
Correct.
What was the process like for you?
It was, you know, it just hit me this morning, actually. You know, it is the culmination of honing the craft of writing and my voice into this book, into this physical book. You know, I feel lucky to have met the Lopez family and for them to pretty much adopt me into their family.
That must have made it easier in a way because it's not only your voice, but you kind of have to channel their voice.
Yeah, as told to. Bricia only gave me one prompt when we signed the contract. She looked at me and she was like, just make me sound like Beyonce.
I read this Vogue article that I stole to by Beyonce that someone wrote, and I was like, I want to sound like this.
So I studied that Vogue article deeply, and I saw some parallels, you know. But what hit it home for me was, besides that joke, she was like, you know, this book is, yes, it's overdue, but I also want my son to be able to cook out of it when he's older. And that responsibility, I was like, okay, I got to make sure that the recipes are accurate as hell and make sure that everything is as easy to read and do, even if you have no kind of background in Mexican cooking.
So I want to talk a little bit about the recipes, and I want to skip over mole for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Just because, I mean, when you say the word Oaxaca, the next word is mole. Mm-hmm. But there's more. I mean, to me, mole is almost like a metaphor. Mm-hmm. For complexity, deliciousness, aromatics, flavor. But not everybody survives on mole 24/7, three meals a day, right? Mm-hmm. So just looking at the book, I looked at some things that, for me, I would want to make. So I love little bites. I love masa. So I keyed in on the garnachas, ismeñas.
Mm-hmm. A garnacha ismeña is from the Isthmus region of Oaxaca. It's in this stretch of land where the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean are 200 miles of each other?
I think so.
Because of that, it's a much more tropical region. There's a lush bounty of ingredients and vegetables and fruits. So that dish is a really amazing an antojito, but it's with a really tasty slaw. And the technique for that was to mulch the beef a little bit. So it's a little bit, a little like minced beef. But that tropical slaw, you taste this, you're like, oh, okay, so this is comida oaxaqueña, so this is Oaxacan food. I didn't know this. And that's what, as you mentioned earlier, the book, what we tried to establish is like, yes, moles are awesome, and I will always love moles, but there are so many other recipes that are really easy to make, that the bases are either beans or vegetables or a chicken or pork, you know, and you build from there.
I tend to gravitate to pretty simple things to eat. So then I end up making pretty simple things. So I love entomatadas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, entomatadas, you know, Bricia had an epiphany with that dish. I think while we were testing it or while we were writing it, she was like, man, this is like the marinara of Mexican food. This is like the spaghetti marinara. It's just simple. Here's the tortillas instead of pasta. Here's a tomato sauce that has garlic in it. We call it like the Oaxacan mother sauce because you use that same tomato sauce for so many other applications. And that's what that dish is. You know, it is crispy pieces of, lightly pan-fried tortillas that get soft and a little crispy. And then you dip them in a really savory tomato salsa, but one that's cooked. And then you sprinkle, you know, whatever fixings you got, onion, parsley, cilantro, a little bit of cheese, and you just eat it like you would like a bowl of pasta, and it's so comforting and it's so filling. And that's actually when you want in Oaxaca, that's what you see people eating every day. And we talk about this in the book, is that the beautiful thing about comida oaxaqueña is that it's a very fluid cuisine, because you can have the entomatadas for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. For breakfast, you'll have it with some fried eggs. For lunch, you'll have it with a piece of grilled tasajo. A thin steak or a grilled pork. And then for dinner, you can have it with a handful of quesillo, which is an unpasteurized Oaxacan string cheese. So, and it's equally as satisfying in any part of the day. And a lot of our recipes are that way. You can have it for breakfast, for lunch, or for mm-hmm. dinner. There's a fluidity to Oaxacan food.
Day of the Dead is coming up. Mm-hmm. I know that there is this dish of squash, which makes sense given that it's this time of year. But it's squash that's stewed in piloncillo, so it's mm-hmm. sweet. Could you describe it?
Yeah, this is really put in the altar, and it's the sweetness that brings people who have passed on to come and have something sweet. During Day of the Dead, squash is one of the things that's abundant in Oaxaca. In Oaxaca, this is considered a candy. And it's really placed on the altar just to signify that sweetness, odor, and taste for those who have passed to come and eat.
So it's a candied winter squash mm-hmm. that has all the warm spices in it.
Exactly.
It's almost like the original pumpkin spice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. See, we're making all sorts of correlations here. I would say that I would recommend someone to put a riff on that, and that would make a really great pie for the holidays too, for Thanksgiving.
So now we're going to go into a mole, but not a mole negro, not a mole rojo. I really love mole amarillo.
Mm.
So it's the yellow mole with white beans, nopales, and dried shrimp. I just thought that was a bowl of comfort.
That one is one of these dishes that my mom would make during Lent all the time. That one, the other one that we have there is lisa and frijol blanco, which is also just as delicious. And it's another dish that I'm a huge fan of that I'm going to encourage people to cook. But if you like mole amarillo, I'm going to tell you what you should definitely try to make. Believe me, it is delicious. Our empanadas de San Antonino, they're made with mole amarillo, but then a mole amarillo actually gets cooked inside the empanada. You use a little bit of pork fat with it, so all the fat kind of oozes out of the masa when you're cooking it, and the mole just sort of thickens inside of it, and it's just the most beautiful.
So the empanada, I have to like break this down. So the empanada is made from a regular empanada dough, or it's a masa?
Got it. I always make this mistake. So empanadas in Oaxaca, they're actually corn. It's just almost like making a tortilla. You cook the first side, then you turn it around, and then you fill it with chicken and this mole amarillo sauce that hasn't been properly cooked, because then it gets cooked inside the empanada and it gets close. So it's almost like a quesadilla with fresh masa. But again, the ooziness of the mole and the thickening of the mole inside the empanada, it's really what brings those flavors. And it's one of my favorite things.
So judging from Instagram, Oaxaca seems to be becoming some kind of an it destination
mm-hmm.
for people who love food, craft, like textiles, color. Can you talk about what it's like to introduce people to Oaxaca for the first time?
Oh, it's fun. because I grew up in Oaxaca. When you grow up with something, you don't really see the beauty as when you leave and come back, right? And I would always come back. I remember when I first took my friends and I thought, man, are they going to like this place? Because it's just, I mean, it's pretty simple. But then I realized that outside of Oaxaca, there isn't a place like that. So taking them in an excursion through the places that I grew up, eating the food that I grew up eating, and people getting just blown away at the deliciousness that comes from simplicity, it's almost like the essence of
culture.
Humanity and culture. Yes, and I think that really is when people go, it's nothing other than authenticity.
Well, I want to thank the two of you. I feel like we barely scratched the surface. I'm so pleased that you and Javier found each other and created this book together.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Evan. And I want to give a shout out to the recipe for pozole mixteco, because that is a really special recipe. It's pozole and mole in one.
Thank you, too, so much.
Of course.
I've been talking with Bricia Lopez of Guelaguetza and Javier Cabral, editor of LA Taco. Their book is Oaxaca, Home Cooking from the Heart of Mexico. Visit the Good Food website for a Dia de los Muertos recipe. After a short break, a closer look at the culinary side of Dia de los Muertos. And we're looking at the endangered status of a fruit that many of us take for granted, and the race to save it. Don't go anywhere.